I'm Craig. I'm from the Windows team back in Redmond, and we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about Windows 10 and how we built it for the enterprise and what that means for everyone. As soon as we have a slide that works. All right. Okay. So, I'm going to give you a little bit of context about the project that we worked on, and then talk specifically about the features for enterprise customers, and actually show a number of them to you as well. And if you look at the actual project that we started on back in, the beginning of the project was probably about 2.5 years ago now. And the intention that we had was to go out and build a new kind of operating system for customers. And we planned to build an operating system that really broke down the barriers and could work across multiple different device types. So here I'm showing everything from very small IoT devices with potentially no screen, up through devices like a mobile phone, up through PCs, desktops, and tablets, and all the way up to a large touchscreen device like a Surface Hub, which we have outside if you would like to see it later. So our intention was, let's build an operating system that can span and run all of those different use cases and can do it in an elegant way. But let's do it with one security model, one way to manage that, and also one development platform, which I'll talk about more shortly. Now, if you go back and look at the history of operating systems at Microsoft, we had a lot of operating systems. We had operating systems for all these kinds of devices, but they were all built by different teams. So we had a team that built a phone product. We had a team that built the desktop and tablet environment, and we had teams building embedded products. Unfortunately, over time, that had resulted in a very fragmented experience. Different management tools, different programming models, different application interfaces. And so that made it hard for everyone. It was hard for a customer to deploy and manage. It was hard for an ISV to decide which platform to target. And it was also hard for us at Microsoft to build things. We had to build a camera application for the phone and a different camera application for the desktop, which was a lot of wasted effort. So by bringing these worlds together, we can make it easier for you, the customers, and we can deliver more rapid innovation that's higher quality to you. So let's talk about the developer platform for a second. We had an interesting vision here. And of course, we wanted to have a world where in our operating system environment, you didn't need to make a decision about what kind of device you were building for, or were you building something for a desktop environment or a mobile environment. We wanted those to be equal equivalent. We also wanted to make sure that all of the code investments people had made over a very long period of time could actually come into the Windows 10 environment and be useful. So investments in building in web-based technology, things people had built in .NET and Win32 over time, modern applications they'd built in the Windows 8 world. And also we wanted to open it up so that in fact, code that had been written for completely other operating system environments could also easily be brought across. And we announced last year our bridge strategy around that. So what's unique today, we talked before about the acquisition of Xamarin, is that if you, for example, were a .NET developer, now you can literally target every kind of Windows device easily on that platform, and you can target also cross-platform development. If you're an iOS developer building in Objective-C, you can build a great application for that environment, and now you can easily, with our Islandwood Bridge, port and build that application on Windows in the same language and toolset that you're familiar with. So we think this is a very unique kind of an environment and a great value proposition for everyone in the IT and development community, and something that our customers are pretty excited about. Now, that was a little bit about like the thinking behind building that project. We assembled this huge engineering team out of all those different organizations. If you count the engineers that build across all of our hardware teams, all of the people building Windows, people working on Xbox, all of our applications that sit on top of this, not in the office world, but first-party apps like camera, music, etc. There's about 12,000 people that work in the engineering team that now sits behind this product. And they worked pretty hard. They built a product, and they built it in a pretty new way in association with the community. We also launched something called the Insider Program that allowed us to involve you in that development process. So we saw telemetry on apps people used, hardware they were running on. We collected a lot of feedback, and we got ready and we launched the product to the market. And we launched that product back in July of last year. So it's really been 6 months or so that Windows 10 has been out there. So let's talk a little bit about the reaction we got from the market. And then we'll go and delve into some of the features and capabilities and why that happened. So the first thing in terms of the reaction in the market is we have seen very rapid adoption. So Windows 10 has been adopted faster than any operating system we've ever created before. And that's true regardless of the segment you look at. Fastest adopted by consumers, fastest adopted by small business, and fastest adopted, actually today, by enterprise as well. Back a few weeks ago in January, we announced this new milestone of having in excess now of 200 million people who have upgraded, in-place upgraded, existing hardware and are now running Windows 10 machines. We upgrade about a million people a day, every single day. So this number continues to grow and is pretty high. Now, what's interesting in that number is about 10%, a little bit more, 22 million at the time, were what we called business machines. They're running in environments that are businesses. And actually, probably about at this time, about 3 million of those were strictly in the enterprise environment. We know that more than half of our customers that Microsoft has an account management relationship with are actually piloting Windows 10 in the enterprise already. And actually here in Switzerland, that number's even higher than that. So I think it was something in the 70% range I heard earlier from the team, and more than 200 enterprise accounts here in Switzerland that are officially piloting Windows 10. So we've seen really good adoption from customers. We saw actually also really pretty decent coverage from the press. You know, sometimes the IT press likes to be a little hard on Microsoft and say things that are not particularly friendly or nice. In the case of Windows 10, we saw the opposite, and they were pretty bullish about that. Now, my team back in Redmond, we also work a lot with software developers. And this slide here shows you some of the companies that we reached out to. And literally, someone on my team called them up and said, hey, we want to put together a slide that talks about software partners that are committed to the platform. Are you okay with us mentioning that you're working on this, letting us use your logo and talk about it? And, you know, within a few days, we had assembled brands like this that said, yep, go for it. They each gave us a slide with a quote, sometimes from their CEO, talking about their commitment. Very different situation from what we saw in the days of Windows 8 when we're out there trying to talk to these people about building one application for our phone and a different application for our desktop and try and support their Win32 app as well. Because of that work we did around universal apps and bringing that ecosystem together, they were all excited to be on board. But they were most excited, of course, about that previous number. You know, if you're a software developer, you know, in the commercial space like this, you go where the installed base is. And when there's hundreds of millions of people in that installed base, it's interesting to you and you're going to support it. So we've seen great commitment from partners. These particular companies and many others are doing both a combination of support activities. So they're all working on support statements for their Win32 apps that they have. They're working on browser compatibility, where they have web-based applications for IE and also Edge. And also many of them are actually working on universal Windows applications that can adapt and run across that full range of devices that we talked about. So pretty good response there. Now, these guys are some of my favorites, the Gartner team. And if any of you subscribe to Gartner and read their content, you'll know that their opinion on Windows 8 was essentially advising their clients to skip it, don't bother, maybe look at it in particular mobile scenarios, but it's not broadly what you want for your desktop environment. I'm pleased to report, you can see here, the Gartner team has a slightly different opinion in Windows 10. So they literally have, these are all public statements they've made around the fact they believe it will be adopted more quickly than Windows 7. They believe it's the inevitable place that organizations will end up. And they actually say that because it's built for a cloud world, and it's built for a world where we're under attack from the point of view of security. And we'll actually spend a bunch of time talking specifically about security features shortly in the product. So really nice to see a difference of opinion when Gartner and our analyst friends are concerned. I was at Mobile World Congress last week. I'll talk more about that a little later, what I saw there. I got the chance to sit down with some of the Gartner team and see what they're hearing. And they again reaffirmed this and said, yep, we're telling our customers to move. In fact, the inquiries that we're getting come in are telling us that customers are really beginning to make that next step. So good momentum. Now, why is that? Like, why is it that the product has got a lot of people excited and got companies thinking about implementing it? Well, when we do sort of briefings with customers and we dig into the topics, these are the areas we usually talk about as value for enterprise customers. We talk about the world we live in with security nowadays and how we've explicitly invested in that. We talk about the world of deployment and management and how we've moved that forward with Windows 10. And then we talk about productivity enhancements and making our users more productive and the work we've done in that space. And finally, we talk about the new world of hardware and what devices are actually enabling today. So these are the four areas we'll look at and explore a bit more deeply now. Let's start with security. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know if this has happened here in the Swiss market or not, but certainly in the US and many other markets, over the past number of years, we've seen customers increasingly come under some form of cyber threat, some form of cyber attack. And it seems that not a week goes by without some kind of large breach happening at some kind of company. Customer data is stolen, credit cards are stolen, information is leaked, lost, etc. And when you get into the root cause of these problems, there are a few things that come up systemically that you hear from customers that are problems. And in Windows 10, we actually collaborated with a number of companies, organizations, to help design the product to be the right security answer for the world they found themselves in. And we tested it against a number of those breaches to see would we have been able to successfully stop those from happening. And that is the case. And so we'll talk through some of this technology. The first one's around data leakage. So here the scenario is essentially I, as an employee, I'm not trying to do anything malicious. I'm just trying to work and be efficient. And so you've probably all done this, or you have people in your companies that do it. I have a file. I'm not really meant to take it with me. It's meant to, you know, remain where I am. But maybe I put it on a USB drive, or I email it to myself, or I post it in an online file sharing site, and I use that from my house or another location. Or maybe I'm doing that to share data with a vendor or a partner that I'm collaborating with. And today, that's very difficult to control from an IT perspective. We can use very complex containerization technology. We can invest in a lot of proprietary expensive tools. But it's still very hard to stop someone that has access to a file from taking that file and putting it somewhere insecure if they choose to do that. In Windows 10, we've invested in a capability we call Enterprise Data Protection. It will be part of the next release of the product. It's still being worked on. It's a big area, but it's something that will help with this coming up in the summertime this year. And it allows you via policy to configure a set of rules that says when information crosses from a corporate stored location, like a SharePoint or a file share, and it goes somewhere else, what should happen? Should that be allowed? Should it be blocked? Should it be audited? And most importantly, should encryption be enforced? And so we can literally use policy in the operating system to encrypt files as they move from a secured corporate location to a non-secured unknown location. So we can ensure that if that file ends up in the hands of someone else, they cannot open and access that information. And we can do it at the core of the operating system in the file layer and the HTTP stack without any issues coming up in terms of being able to get around that. So that's one big investment, protecting information. The next big investment for us is replacing passwords. A lot of these breaches happen because passwords are compromised. They're shared, they're passed around, they're written down. Like, there's all sorts of challenges that can come up with passwords. So we have moved to a world in Windows 10 of going to a key-based authentication system. We call it Passport. And basically, being able to, the first time I configure a new device, have a key created for me, stored securely in the TPM of that device, and a shared secret being used to basically authenticate that is protected with public-private key combinations. And there's literally no actual password I'm sending over the network. I'm using some kind of identity to access and authenticate myself on the physical device to unlock the key to be able to log into the network. But I can only do that on specific devices that I've tied my identity to. So it's essentially two-factor from the get-go. One factor is something I know, the PIN, or potentially some other mechanism of unlocking the device, and the other factor being the device. I have to have the device. We've also added biometrics, something called Windows Hello. And Windows Hello essentially lets you be the password that unlocks that passport capability on the machine. So you've probably seen, for example, in our own hardware, we support facial recognition for unlocking. We also do fingerprint, and that's an extensible model that lets people do different things with that. And I'll show you a bit about that shortly. And then the final area we've identified and worked against is malware-related attacks. So this could be malware that's introduced unsuspectingly by a user of a system. But actually, in a lot of cases, what you see in some of the retail breaches, people were able to gain access to a network. They were then able to use that to map resources and figure out weak points to inject code. And they were able to get data collection code running on things like point-of-sale systems. So in the US, for example, the Home Depot, the breach got into their self-service point-of-sale systems. Everyone who swiped on a self-service point-of-sale system for 15 months, on every one of those things, there was code running that collected the credit card details and sent it to a bad guy's server. So that's obviously not good. In the case of things like point-of-sale systems, ATMs, those kind of systems, you want to lock them down and make sure they can only run the code that you control and like. And so we created something called Device Guard that actually does that. So I'm going to show you a couple of these things to give you an idea. First of all, let's start with kind of a hello system here. So duplicate my screen, lock my screen. And you'll see with Windows Hello, basically my camera in my device is looking for me here. I'm just covering it up with my finger now so it doesn't log me in. When I uncover that, it's going to look at me and be able to recognize me and just log me in. So you've probably seen that capability, and some of you may be using it today. It's beautiful when you're using this as a tablet. because I don't have to think about typing the complex, hard Microsoft password anymore when I don't have a keyboard attached. I just look at it and it logs me in. So that's great when you have new hardware. What about when you have old hardware? So let me switch machines here. Here I have an older machine. It's still a great laptop and it will run fine for many years. But I want to log into it using two-factor authentication. And so what I have here is a Windows Phone. And my Windows Phone has the ability to also support that passport capability I talked about. And it's connected and verified with this device using a secured Bluetooth bond. And so I can literally, you can see I'm not over there touching that thing, I can literally log in from my phone, which I've unlocked with a PIN code, and my phone will be able to act as a second level of authentication and log me in with that device. It takes a little bit of time after the thing's been sleeping, but you can see how I logged into that just by using my phone and unlocking my phone. So something I have, my phone, something I know, my PIN code, and then secure login to that device when I come up. So we can extend that scenario to work across hardware that you have that doesn't have the right kind of cameras or biometric hardware included, which is pretty cool. So that's a little bit on Hello. Let me just show you now something about Device Guard. And so I have a pretty simple scenario here for Device Guard. And you can see in this screen that I have now, this is basically a Windows 7 virtual machine that's running here. And just a couple of things to know about it. It's protected with my Windows 7 firewall. I have, in this case, Defender running on it. It could, of course, be any kind of antivirus. My machine is essentially protected as far as I'm concerned. And I've been sent a link here to download a new expense application from my company. Well, that's what it looks like. This is essentially a phishing attack where I've been sent a malicious piece of software that looks like something I am okay executing. And so I download this thing and I go ahead and run it. And what you should look at is what happens when this code executes to the state of my machine. So I run it. Life is good, I'm very happy, I have the new expense app, I can keep working. But in actual fact, this was a bad guy's app that I mistakenly have installed. And you can see that the code has actually turned my firewall off, it's disabled my virus protection, it's done who knows what to that machine. I'm now totally owned, and I don't even know it in terms of that environment. Now, if you think these attacks are theoretical, they're not. We actually had one of these happen at Microsoft in the last year where an app was created to try and get access to our network, and it was literally sent to some of our employees as if it was an internal application. And we were lucky that one of them thought it was a bit suspicious and checked into it and was able to report that. But these type of attacks do actually happen. Now, in Windows 10, if I was to use that same scenario, here's my Windows 10 virtual machine. It's protected in the same way with the firewall and the Defender app. Here's exactly the same program being downloaded. The difference now is that when I try and run it, you'll actually see that it comes up and says, hang on a second, I'm going to block this application from running because Device Guard is turned on. Now, what does that really mean? Well, Device Guard is essentially the ability for you to digitally sign and whitelist known good applications. So if you have not signed that application in your organization with your certificate and said it's okay, the machine will just not execute it. So that pretty much eliminates almost any kind of malware attack or foreign executable, with the exception of things that are runtime-based through Java or Flash or something like that. Pretty effective. We've seen that now be deployed in a number of large retail environments, and also branch banking is another scenario where it's pretty interesting. You probably wouldn't see people do that for the standard information worker, because you wouldn't want to have to whitelist and sign the vast number of apps that they might need. But in an environment where you know the very small number of things that run on it, it's a great way of protecting that. We believe the combination of Hello, Passport, and Device Guard would have eliminated every major security breach that we've analyzed and looked at in the past 18 months. Now, here's a proof point that's kind of interesting. You might remember that I talked about how we worked with customers to design these products. One of the customers we worked with in the 18 months we were building and coding on the product was the U.S. Department of Defense. They were one of five accounts that we literally every week reviewed our designs, like worked deeply with them. They issued a memo in November of this year from their CIO that said, we are going to put Windows 10 on every device that we have in the Department of Defense. And just 2 weeks ago, the Secretary of Defense in the U.S. signed that memo into what they call an executive order, which now makes it like law in the Department of Defense. So if you are in a branch of the Department of Defense, whether that's Navy, Air Force, whoever in the U.S. now, you have until January of next year to complete the upgrade to Windows 10 in your part of the organization, or you're liable for court-martial. Just kind of an interesting situation. Now, how big is that deployment? They have 4 million devices that they will upgrade between today and January next year. So, you know, just think about that. Department of Defense, like, they literally said, to improve our ability to protect ourselves against cyber threat, we are going to do the fastest deployment we've done of any operating system, and within 1 year, we will move 4 million machines to Windows 10. So that's kind of a good validation, although they're obviously a military organization. You can guarantee that if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for the rest of us too, and it's a pretty good validation of the security work. So let's talk about deployment now. Another great topic we all love in the IT world. And here we've tried to make it easy and bring it into the cloud for you. So what do I mean? Does anyone here like build images for Windows in their environment, have like imaging, re-image machines when they come into the company? I'm sure there's a few of you that are involved in that. And like today, for example, if you use the Enterprise Edition of Windows, when you buy a new machine, it's very difficult to get that installed with the Enterprise Edition. You would have to provide the image to the OEM and manage a process with them. So typically what people do is they buy a machine and then they just wipe it and put their image on with Enterprise. In Windows 10, you don't need to do that anymore. It's all enabled via keys. You can get a Pro machine, you can connect it to your network, and it magically becomes an Enterprise machine with all the capability of Enterprise, just turned on with a key. So very simple kind of uplift of capability. We've also done a lot of work to simplify the world of device management. Typically what I find here is some companies think of Windows machines as desktops. They manage them with System Center, Config Manager, they have a whole infrastructure of that. And then they have a different team that runs an MDM system. And that team's responsible for managing and securing mobile devices, which typically they've thought of as phones and increasingly tablets. And then they get a Windows machine and they're like, well, what is this? Is it a desktop? Do I manage it here? Or is it a mobile device and do I manage it here? And the answer with Windows 10 is, it doesn't matter. Like, you can choose. You can manage them all in the old school way you've been doing it and are happy with. Or you can move certain users, certain kinds of hardware, certain scenarios to a MDM-based approach where potentially they're not in the office very often. Like, it's actually kind of hard to manage things with System Center, Config Manager, and Group Policy if they never come behind the firewall. If they're only ever used outside of the corporate firewall, it's pretty hard to do in that environment. MDM gives you a great choice, and with Windows, it's an equal-class citizen on either side of the fence. And then I called it mobile first, cloud first here. It's essentially build the operating system from Microsoft that works seamlessly with our cloud technology. So if you're using Azure Active Directory as your security principle, say in an Office 365 deployment, we understand that. We can work out of the box with Azure Active Directory. We have a cloud-based store, a business store that's ready for you to deploy and manage apps and do that in a cloud-provided sense that we make available to you. So in every case, we've done the work of making those scenarios operate for you. So let's take a look at a couple of those things. And here, I hope the demo gods are with me. This is my challenging one. All right, so what I have here is a couple of things that I'm going to do. So I have, this is my personal cell phone. And so it's important because it has my actual real cell phone number in it that's configured in Microsoft Security Directory. And I'm going to show you something on that in a second. So what my scenario here is I've just got a new machine. It's brand new out of the box. I'm running through the first time out of the box experience, which I'm sure you've all done many times. And I'm not in the office. I'm clearly here. But I still want to join my office environment and be able to access and use all of my resources. So the first question Windows 10 asks me here is, well, who owns this PC? Is it a personal thing you want to set up, or is it your company? And it's clearly my company. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's my company. And then it says, well, how do you want to get access to company resources? In the old days, at this point, I would have just been asked to enter my domain credentials, and it would have looked for a domain controller, and it would have attempted to join my machine to the domain and do all of that good stuff. Clearly, that's not going to work here, because I'm not in the office. We used to try and do things like now connect a VPN and remotely do it, and it was all kind of hard and challenging. Now I can just use the cloud. So I can just say, well, I'm going to use Azure Active Directory, and it's going to say, okay, well, what's your Azure login? And I have one of those provided to me by my company. I'm going to put that in. And what it's now going to do is it says, you're from Microsoft. You guys have a special kind of a scenario. Your IT department has created their process for configuration and login, so we'll take you through that process. And this is something all of you can have in our Azure environment. So I'm going to put my password in. And remember I said passwords are evil. They can get lost. People can have them. I could be some malicious hacker that's doing this because I got Craig's password. Well, what we've done, again, using standard out-of-the-box stuff, is we've said, okay, we need two factors of authentication here. If someone's trying to access a resource or join a machine remotely over the cloud, I want them to have a smart card. I don't have that because my machine is just getting set up. Or I'm going to actually call them and verify their identity. So I can say sign in with phone. And Microsoft is now going to call me. They have my number. It's in the directory. And so shortly, you know, the demo gods of phones. Oh, there we go. So I've got a call.
Thank you for using Microsoft's sign-in verification system. Please enter your PIN followed by the pound key to finish your verification. If you do not initiate...
So I put in my PIN, which is...
Verification denied. Thank you for using Microsoft's sign-in verification system. Please
not exactly what I was hoping for.
Followed by the pound key to finish your verification.
But you can see it's real. So at this point, it should fail. And maybe I get the chance to call back.
Verification denied.
Oh. I must have typed the code wrong. Let's try one more time.
Thank you for using Microsoft's sign-in verification system. Please enter your PIN followed by the pound key to finish your verification. If you did not initiate this verification, someone may be trying to access your account. Please press 0# to submit a fraud alert. This will notify your company's IT team and block further verification attempts. Verification denied. Thank you for using Microsoft.
All right. Anyway, you get the point. So at this point, if I put the right code in, my machine would be joined to the domain. What happens is the MDM of my choice now just configures it in the background. My applications are streamed, my policies and certificates and Wi-Fi and VPNs and smart cards and all those good things that we love in the IT pro community are automatically configured, set up, and put on that machine in the background. So my new out-of-the-box machine becomes a corporate machine just by a connection to the cloud and the use and support of Azure. All right, so let me show you another one of our cloud-based scenarios, and that's the Windows Store for Business. So when we first launched the product, we didn't have a environment for I'm just remembering what I typed wrong on my passcode. We didn't have an environment for the business store. We had a consumer environment, and so it worked with a Microsoft account. And it didn't understand things like that Azure Active Directory account and my corporate credentials. In November, we released an update for Windows 10, and one of the things we added was support for a business store. And the business store lets you easily, as an IT professional, find, acquire, distribute, and manage applications and licenses associated with those. And from an end user's perspective, it gives me a private place. I can still see, obviously, the consumer store if you allow it using my personal account, but my work account gets associated with a private area of the store where I just see the things my company makes available to me. So I'm going to sign into the store here with my corporate credential as an IT administrator, and that's going to take me now into the business store. And in the business store, I have, you know, various different applications that have been published by software developers that I can get access to. And you can see there's a bunch of different choices here that that I could pick from, lots and lots of them. Also categories. Now, I'm going to walk you through some scenarios that use ISV applications, but they could equally as well be your internal line of business applications. So there's a process that lets you publish those in the same way. You can actually have them submitted from development teams, and then you can sort of approve their release into the store and do all of the same management characteristics. So although I'm showing apps and brands you're familiar with, they could easily be internal ones. So let's show a third-party one first, and let's search for Citrix. And you know, imagine I was using, say, a Citrix product to do a meeting with a client or something like that. I would want my my employees to be able to get that. So I can literally pick that application and just say I want to publish it in my private store. It's just as easy as that. And so now that application is in the list of applications that my end users can access and see, along with a bunch of others. So anything that is in available for publish to the business store, which is work we take care of with all the ISVs that are out there, you can now draw on and publish for your set of users. Now, if I was to pick a different application, say Word here, there's a few different things I can do with an application that's in my store. One of the things is I can assign it to specific people. And so let's pick Allison and Klaus, and submit that. What now happens is, because I've assigned it to those users, and explicitly to their Active Directory accounts, that app will be push-installed onto their machines you know, when they're actually connected and online. So that can be done either through the store itself, or it can also work in concert with an MDM product if you happen to use something like EMS from Microsoft or, in fact, any other third-party EMS. So then the final thing I want to show you in the store is license details. So you can see here I've picked Word again, and I've got those licenses assigned to various people, and I have 5 licenses currently in use. I can actually do things like just pick people and reclaim those licenses so that I could now assign them to someone else. And actually, that will work automatically with your Active Directory. So if someone leaves the company, the license will just come back to the license pool, and now it can be reassigned out and used in that environment. So all the things you need to do lifecycle management of apps, license management, actually procurement of applications. So in the next release, we'll actually support the ability for you to transact POs with those ISVs through our e-commerce system if you choose. So you'll literally be able to actually do the full acquisition process in a standardized corporate buying pattern. So we've made a lot of progress on the store, and that's one place where we're pretty happy in the cloud side of things. All right, let's talk about our last two areas. So the next one is productivity. And, you know, I think this one has been a really pretty fun experience for us. We've learned a lot through the journey we went on with Windows 8. So what we tried to do with Windows 8 is we tried to build the best touch environment you could have, like fantastic user experience for touch-based use cases, particularly on large screen tablets, which was awesome. In fact, if you took something like a Surface Pro with Windows 8 on and you gave it to someone, they loved it. They thought the experience was great when they were using it for touch. Unfortunately, the entire installed base of every PC on the planet was not a touch-based machine. And we didn't really build the user experience that was great with Windows 8 on a mouse and keyboard machine, which is what, in fact, everyone was using. So with Windows 10, we took a slightly different approach. Two things that are important. Number one, we said, what's the most common operating system people are upgrading from? The answer is Windows 7, by a long shot. So let's make it an easy transition for someone who's coming from Windows 7. Start menu, things they're familiar with, like just something they can easily use and adopt. Point two, we had learned that you couldn't really build one user experience that worked equally well across multiple device types. And remember I said way back at the beginning, it's all about device types, like working well across different device types. So what we said was, well, we clearly need one kind of experience on a small device you use often in one hand. We need a different kind of experience on a tablet. We need a different experience on a mouse and keyboard machine. And we need a different experience on something like a Surface Hub. If you saw people try and use the 80-inch Surface Hub in the early days, they would literally be interacting with the UI on this side, and then they would have to walk all the way to the other side of the screen to do something else. Like, that's not very sensible. Like, put all the UI control in one place so you can control it without having to walk backwards and forwards on that screen. So we created this capability. We generally refer to it as Continuum, which means the user experience will adapt for the modality in which you're using it, which means that something like a two-in-one device, like my Surface here, can be a tablet or it can be a laptop. And it can transition seamlessly from a UI that's optimized for mouse and keyboard to a UI that's optimized for touch. And I'm in control of that as the end user. I can lock into one or the other. I can have it adjust based on whether keyboard, whether peripherals are present, whether it's docked, those kinds of things. So we really worked hard on that user experience that could adapt across devices. And that's actually in the Universal Windows application platform too. So when you build a universal app, it natively can adapt for those different kinds of devices and use cases when you're doing that as a developer. Now we also did something that's being shown in the middle there that was a little bit unique, and you might have played with this or seen it, on the phone platform, where we allowed the phone to have a second screen, and so you could have the phone screen optimized for phone things, and then but you could literally have it running a PC screen as well. And so if I was to run something like the email client, if it was on the phone, it would be optimized for my One Touch. If I threw it onto the big screen, now it's running just like it would on a desktop, with mouse and keyboard support and full productivity. And we're just at the beginning of that continuum journey. I'll talk more about it in a second. But it's getting pretty interesting when you start to bring these new applications in that can adjust for a small screen and do things differently when you got to a big screen. And then we also did a lot of work on things like Cortana, our intelligent assistant that is in Windows 10 and also has scenarios that span into mobile as well. We have a little bit more work to do on that in the next release as it pertains to business. Today, you can really think of Cortana as a personal assistant. It's wired to work with your Microsoft account. In the future, we will also open Cortana so that Cortana understands and can work cohesively with your Active Directory account also. So you would be able to potentially have scenarios that are personal and roam around personal devices, and a different set of content and experiences that work when you're in a business environment. And of course, Cortana will bring those two things together for you seamlessly in the experience. It's quite a hard piece of engineering work, and so that's something we're currently working on for the next update that we'll release on the platform. So lots of stuff in productivity. Let's talk a little bit about devices. The first one on devices is we know there's a big installed base of hardware. We know companies are not going to buy new machines for everyone so that they can get some of the things I showed you, like Windows Hello. Like, they'll refresh a certain amount in a certain cadence, of course. But no company's going to wake up and say, wow, logging on with your face is so compelling that I'm going to buy, 20,000 new machines today and give them to everyone at my company. So we knew we had to make upgrade great on existing hardware. And so we worked really hard on the core fundamentals, on performance, on boot time, on battery life, all of that stuff. So we know that Windows 10 boots faster on the same hardware than Windows 7. We know that applications launch faster on Windows 10 on the same hardware than Windows 7. So we've really, done something that isn't what people expect. People expect that an operating system version, when it goes up, will have higher system requirements and require more hardware than it did previously. And that's not the case with Windows 10. It runs better on the same hardware than Windows 7. And so that's actually kind of a nice thing. You can get more life out of the hardware in your fleet actually by upgrading. That's point one. Point two, there's a lot of skepticism and concern about doing in-place upgrade. People don't like to do it in an enterprise environment. They would rather wipe that thing and start afresh. And a lot of that's been created by us not doing a great job in the past of in-place upgrade. However, when you decide that you're going to give a free upgrade to anyone that wants it, and you upgrade 200 million people in 6 months, and you upgrade 1 million people every single day, like every single day, you don't take the weekends off, every day you upgrade 1 million people, in-place upgrade better work. Or you're going to break an awful lot of machines and make a lot of people unhappy. So that the level of investment and the confidence we have in in-place upgrade in Windows 10 from a 7 or 8 machine is extremely high. And it has been proven out by the hundreds and hundreds of millions of upgrades that we've now done in the real world. It works great. So whatever hardware you have in your environment, it's in pretty good shape for Windows 10. The second thing that that I'll talk about is new kinds of hardware. And here I'm going to talk a little bit about Surface for a second. People often ask, why did Microsoft get into building the Surface? Is Microsoft committed to hardware? What's the long-term roadmap of Surface? And our goal with Surface was to show what was possible. Like, we wanted to build a new device, a new category of devices, the two-in-one, that showed how the world could be where you had a single device that could achieve the outcomes of both a laptop and a tablet. Before we did this, you remember the current state most people had was they believed they needed a laptop and a tablet. They were two separate things. And over the last two, 3 years, we've been on this journey to turn our surface line into something that could actually do both of those things. And in the beginning, it took us time to get that down to a good size and, get the performance and battery life. And, it was a journey from a hardware point of view. But what's really been interesting in the last few months is we've essentially created a category that's been validated by the ecosystem. This was the dream of Surface. We didn't want to be the biggest hardware vendor on the planet. We wanted to prove that this was a valid category, that Windows could have beautiful devices and pull the ecosystem along and encourage them to go in that direction. And so, as I mentioned, I was at Mobile World Congress last week, and obviously it's a mobile show, but there's a lot of innovation in tech generally talked about and unveiled. And these are photographs of just four devices that were on display in various different vendors' environments. So at the top there, the HP X2 device got announced probably in January timeframe. This thing looks pretty similar to a Surface, right? I mean, it's got a kickstand, it's thin and light, it's a Skylake-based machine, it's got a great keyboard, Windows Hello logon, all of that stuff, but with a different design aesthetic and a different set of enterprise offerings around it from HP, but validating that platform. The Galaxy Tab Pro device from Samsung. Samsung getting back into the Windows space in a big way and delivering a lightweight, thin, tablet device that can transition into a more two-in-one form factor. At the bottom, a completely new entrant from Huawei, where this thing is just beautiful when you see it in person. It weighs just over 600 grams. It's extremely thin. It's all made of metal. It's a beautiful device. Surprised a lot of people at the show. And then you see Lenovo there with a product that they also announced, which was the Yoga 710. And so the reason I tell you all this is, there's a new category that's been created, and that's the game we are playing in hardware. We're going to innovate in the device space and help move it forward with Windows. Now, of course, we also announced the Surface Book pretty recently as a new kind of form factor. And actually, if you haven't seen these things, they have them outside here at the event. We expect in the next year to also see a lot of new innovation come back to the laptop category and really see that get moving again as well. So that's the goal with Surface Book. And then the final thing I'll say on hardware is I talked about that continuum capability where Windows Phone could also be a PC for a certain category of users. That was also on show quite a bit at Mobile World Congress. And so these are all devices that were either announced at the show or just before, and that were being shown. Probably the HP Elite X3 was the most interesting. It's about a 6-inch phablet-style device. Beautiful hardware, all metal, fantastic screen, built for continuum, and also back-ended by something called HP Workplace, which gives you virtualization of Windows applications in the cloud on top of Azure that they've extended. So you can literally plug this in to the dock, and you could run AutoCAD, virtual in the cloud, on the full screen, just powered by the phone. They also made a peripheral for it that looks like a laptop. So it has a keyboard and a screen, but it's dumb. It has no CPU, no memory, no whatever. It literally just wirelessly connects to the phone, or you can plug a cable in, and it's just a screen and keyboard. So it looks like you're using a laptop, and it works just like a laptop, but the CPU and all the power of the device is the phone. So just a lot of innovation going on in this space that is, powered by and a part of what we're doing in Windows. So two more things here, and then we'll close out. The first one is line of business scenarios. Another reason that people love the Windows ecosystem is the choice you have around device type. So, if you're a oil and gas customer that needs an intrinsically safe device that you can use in a gas field, we have those. If you're a retail customer that wants a 3D barcode scanner and payment on the same ruggedized device, we have those. So, whatever scenario it is you want to cover, the Windows platform has the right hardware for you. And then finally, pretty interesting, you've probably been following the emergence of HoloLens and this new sort of augmented reality. Also, we're partnering closely with Oculus Rift and others who are doing virtual reality products that extend Windows, particularly for gaming. But there's a whole new world of hardware coming that, for businesses, lets us do things we haven't even imagined before. So we spent some time with Volvo, with HoloLens. And if you've ever been to a Tesla showroom and you see how Tesla sells cars, and they do it in a retail mall, and that's hard for car companies. Like, they can't even imagine that. Typically, you have to go to some car dealer a long way away, and so you don't get exposure to brands until you're much further down the purchase cycle than what Tesla have done. Tesla will get someone to come in before they even know what the brand is, experience it, and potentially buy because they get excited. So other people want to do the same thing. But if you're Volvo, you have a lot more cars than one. So you can't really build a shopping mall like that. They're going to do it with augmented reality. So you'll literally have a small store in the mall. You'll go in and you'll use these devices to be able to experience the cars even though they aren't actually there, customize and interact with them. And so that's just one example of hundreds, literally, where people are just inventing new ideas of how to interact with these devices. And that's a big part of our bet moving forward in Windows. All right, so I'm not going to go into roadmap and all of the stuff here. I just want to, like, the point I want to land is this is not the monolithic world you're used to in the past with Windows, where we release something every 2 or 3 years. We are on a more frequent path to release smaller amounts of innovation more quickly and help you consume that and actually deploy it in your organization. We call it Windows as a service. There's a whole hour-long topic we could go into. Hopefully it's covered here at the show tomorrow. But we release something in the summer. We updated it in the fall with things like the business store. We're hard at work on the next set of capability that will come in the not-too-distant future. And build was mentioned before. Build is where we will actually begin to unveil the roadmap and capability for the next set of updates that will come to Windows. So look at the build content for that. All right, so I'll just close out here and say, thank you for your time. Thanks for having us here from Redmond with you in Switzerland. It's been great to be here. And, you know, as part of the team that got to work on this product and help bring it to life for customers, we couldn't be more happy with how ready it is for business, how many customers are actually deploying and testing right now. As I said before, more than 200 companies here in Switzerland and are already under deployment, and some of you are probably in the room here. And so my call to action would be, if you haven't tried it already, begin to evaluate, begin to pilot, and begin to start your deployment today. It's a much easier upgrade than when we all collectively went through the XP to 7 migration. App compatibility is much more straightforward. We had one organization, a Swedish furniture manufacturer and retailer, who tested 3,000 applications as part of their planned migration. They're running on Windows 7 fine. They tested 3,000 applications, and they found that 2,997 of those applications worked absolutely 100% fine, no mitigation or remediation required. So we haven't changed the Win32 APIs from 7 to 10. We essentially have extremely good compatibility for those legacy applications that you rely on in your business. So don't worry about that. Start testing today. And I would encourage you to join the Windows Insider program as a way of also getting access to new capability and being able to test that in advance. So with that, I'll thank you, and I'll leave you just with a final slide that shows some of the brands that my team has been working with to help tell evidence stories and who have either upgraded or in the process of upgrading to Windows 10 today and are loving it. So thank you.